So you have a itinerary and your love overlanding. You have plans to do it big on the trace and some super glamping. One idea, deep news and reviews, a podcast the first rate and here just for you. You don't have to think about it, join us and be about it. Something interesting we want to hear about it, come on let's talk about it. Welcome to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints Podcast.
Sponsored by Midland. Communication for every adventure. The industry leader in radio communication technology and innovation for over 50 years. Sponsored by MyMedic. Sponsored by Tembo Tusk. Sponsored by Shower Pouch. Sponsored by DeMoss Collective. Mission built and made for mobility. Sponsored by BrewTrek. Sponsored by Hard Impact Designs.
Always remember, the opinion you follow should be your own. Just consider the things stated here to be a second opinion from a complete stranger online.
So, Mike, check this out. I may be the last person to know about this, so I'm not, but it's new news to me. Have you ever heard about the weed loop across?
Is that going to make me the second to last person?
Have you heard of...
It might be the second to last person.
Maybe, because I've never heard of this. Have you heard of the weed loop across the U.S. and Canada?
The weed, spelled W-E-E-D?
Weed loop. So I was talking to somebody about and giving them suggestions about places to go and stuff like that. And they were like, oh, no, I never go to Utah and some other state that I was recommending. And it was like, and I was like, why? And it's like, oh, I only do the weed loop. I'm like, what the hell is that? And then he said, pull up a map. And then he showed me every state that was legal. And he showed me how you can basically do a circumvent the United States. And almost all the states are legal. So you can do your travel and always be in a state where it's legal to smoke weed. And then he showed me further and he was like, so you can go up to Canada all the way to Alaska. You know, you can do the whole coast. And he was showing how you can go across and take it through Canada and come in like how I did last year through Vermont and everything. And how you can basically travel around North America on a weed loop. And
I heard somebody talking about that. It's funny you said that. I did hear somebody talking about that. I don't think I heard it referred to as the weed loop, but I heard somebody say the same thing that you just said, that I avoid Utah because you can't smoke in Utah. So that's kind of funny.
So I just thought that was I hate being the last person to hear news. And I thought, I was like, Mike probably knows about that.
No.
And it just made me think about with the rise of weed tourism in places like Canada, in Colorado and places like that. Are we going to see a merging of this infamous weed loop with actual real commerce in the future? Are we going to start seeing events where if you don't allow that, will the event be popular or not? Because I'm talking to people now who base their decisions on whether they can smoke marijuana. And it's a lot of people. That's what I'm learning. It's a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm sure that's definitely the case. I mean, I've got to believe that over the next couple of years that most of the places in the United States are going to become legal. You would think, you know, just like a lot of other things in the U.S., it probably should be a federal thing, but it isn't. And they need to solve that thing. But there are definitely, I mean, can you imagine there are probably certain festivals and things that are not going to take place in a state that is prohibitive, for sure. For not just for weed, but for all sorts of different reasons. Absolutely.
Well, I think we're seeing the last of where elected officials try to stop the legalization of marijuana. I envision in the next 2 to 3 years, it's going to be across the United States. So this might not even be an issue in a few years, because it'll just be legal everywhere.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to hear your opinion on that. So we can move on. I just was very curious about that. And if there's anybody listening that knows about this and has more information, I am very curious about this.
All right, put it down below and let us know.
So I posted on my Instagram that I'm going to Overland Expo, and I asked for a roll call to see who else is going. And a lot of people are going. My calculations or prediction is that this will be a new high number for Overland Expo West as far as attendance. I feel pretty confident in that. What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree. There are different than last year, I would say. There are a lot of big name people that are going to be in attendance for sure. So I think that there's some draw power there. And, you know, crossing our fingers as always at the weather, because you never know, Flagstaff may in, you know, high elevation in Arizona, who knows what could happen. We've had snow, we've had wind, we've had rain, we've had cold, we've had hot, we've had all of the above. But I agree with you, Phil. I think that this is going to be a big event for sure. I mean, you know, whether or not it gets the same numbers as last year, more or less, you know, who knows? But I will tell you that last year it was huge. I mean, we were talking, I don't know, what was mid 30,000s or something over the weekend. And if you recall, Friday was probably the busiest day, which kind of surprised
me. Yeah, that was weird.
Right. So we'll see what happens this year. I mean, some of that, you know, remember we had wind and we had some crappy weather for sure. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm confident that it's going to be a big event. There's a lot of people to come out and see and talk to, a lot of vendors, a lot of great classes as always. And, you know, you and I will be there for sure. And looking to meet, you know, all you guys out there in Cyberworld. So stop by and say hi for sure.
So you were mentioning about the wind and the cold and different things. I think that might be a good subject for us to cover, is about what you should expect as a newbie camping at Overland Expo, because a lot of people are shocked and unprepared. They just hear Arizona, desert, hot, and they're not prepared for what actually occurs.
Right.
So let's start with the daytime. I recommend, you know, everybody wants to have their cool hat with their logo on it and all that type of stuff. But my recommendation is get one of those big straw hats or something that actually covers your head and saves your neck from exposure and things like that.
Bottom line is, and the reason I'm laughing is because I know you have been to as many, if not more, Overland Expos as I have over the years. My Lord, we have seen everything from, you know, 3 foot deep mud that you could barely walk through to icicles and frozen stuff falling off. There's your hat. That looks good. Oh, that's a nice hat, Phil. Especially goes with the ear, you know, the ear set there. For those that are out on our podcast and can't see it, he's got like a straw hat with the DMOS emblem on it there from the shovel company. I see it looks good. But as I'm saying, be prepared for everything. Like, and no whining. This is a no whining zone. You know, it's called overlanding for a reason. So if you're going to camp, expect that it's going to be freezing cold, or it's going to rain, or it's going to snow, or whatever. If the weather forecast says it's going to be great, fantastic. But my recommendation is don't believe it, even if it says that.
And I just want to reiterate what you just said, because everywhere you go, people say, you know, be prepared for different weather and layer and stuff like that. And then what most people do is say, ah, that's Florida. It's going to be such and such. So they don't do it. This is a place you definitely need to do what we just said. Be ready for all temperatures. Me and you have both.
Well, remember.
We have both experienced. No, I was going to say,
remember, it's at 8,000 feet, right? I mean, it's at 8,000 feet. It's higher than Denver, Colorado. So, I mean, yes, it's in Arizona. No, it's not what you would call traditional Arizona in your head, seeing a cactus and a desert. That's not Flagstaff.
So let's go through a typical day as far as the weather and maybe what you'd be wearing. So I know for me, when I first get up between 6 and 8 o'clock, if I get up that early, it's rather chilly. So you've got like a sweatshirt on, or, you know, you may even have on like a little puffy or something early in the morning. And then by 9 o'clock, it starts to warm up. And then you start seeing people taking their hoodies off or their sweatshirts or whatever, and they wrap them around their neck, or they put them in their backpack, and they just have on a t-shirt, and they have on shorts for the rest of the day. And then about 5 o'clock, when you're going to the happy hours, it's starting to chill a little bit. And then it goes off the rails after that. It could be freezing. It could stay hot. It could rain. It could snow. So I just really want to emphasize to people, don't think you've got it figured out.
Yeah, just like in a real life camping and overlanding, layer up. You know, I do the t-shirt, the sweatshirt, the puffy jacket, the rain gear or windbreaker over the top of that. And like Phil said, you know, you take one off at a time, and hopefully, you know, because I'm like a sort of a turtle. I'm a warm weather fan myself. And hopefully it gets warm, but you know, you never know. It may not, but just be prepared for all of the elements, you know, and it's not just weather or meaning like it's not just precipitation that could be the issue or temperature. It also can be wind for sure. I mean, we experiencing that last year. I mean, to say that it was windy is a gross understatement. And remember, fires this time of the year are a potential in that part of Arizona as well. So you have to take certainly look out for that.
And be a little more descriptive about the wind, because I really don't want somebody to think.
Well,
do you remember
if you look back, there's probably a video out there somewhere of you and me holding down an easy up. Well, we're trying to do an interview with
Outdoor X4 magazine.
Outdoor X4 magazine. That's right. And we are literally talking and holding, because I mean, it had to be all of 50 miles an hour at least. I mean, there were easy ups and signs and all sorts of debris blown around, and it's super dusty. Now, having said that, I'll give you the pre-up. There's been a significant amount of snowfall and weather this season. So last year it was dry, and because it was windy, it was very dusty. This year, you might want to bring your duck boots and some boots, because there's definitely a possibility that the ground is going to be wet.
And I don't think you still explained how windy it was when we were holding that easy up canopy.
Here we go.
It literally was lifting us off of the ground. That's a powerful wind to lift us off the ground like that.
Yeah. I remember talking to Michael from, Overland Bound as well. And it was pretty weird. We could barely hear ourselves talk. It was crazy. Yeah. So
I was laughing at you guys, because the wind was blowing to my back, because I was the cameraman, and it was blowing right in you guys' face, and you were just trying to look like nothing was wrong. So another thing I was going to suggest, if you've been trying to come up with a good excuse for buying, like what you just did, a nice expensive water bottle, this is a good excuse to get one, because I advise you to have a good water bottle with you on one of these trips, to Overland Expo when you're walking around. If you were to ask the medical people,
I remember elevation. It's good. I'm glad you mentioned that, Phil, because elevation is a scenario where you really got to make sure you hydrate. And if you're not hydrating, you're going to end up, you know, particularly if it's warm. Just be very careful of that. We had some problems with some people actually last year in Bend, Oregon. It was sunny and warm, and you know, people were definitely getting heat frustration and stuff. So you just be very careful with that. And the elevation obviously makes that considerably worse. And then in a rare instance, that's possibility that you might have a cocktail or a drink later on. Alcohol causes an issue with that as well. So just be very careful.
And if you're concerned about, well, I have the water bottle, there's plenty of places all over to fill it with water. So they have little stations to supply your water on a personal level. And even though I said that, don't think that just because they're supplying that water, that they have enough water to fill your tank or something like that. It's not that kind of party. So
and while we're talking about it, let's talk about, so besides just the weather, of other things that I, you know, I encourage you guys to bring, walk around with a pen and paper, some kind of notepad or something. You're going to find lots of things you might want to take notes on to just kind of remember later. Or if you're one of the people that uses your phone, that obviously works as well. And in a bag, don't necessarily rely on, yes, you get an Overland Expo bag. Some years they're great. Some years they're not so good. Who knows? But just, you know, bring a bag that you can comfortably carry that's not going to tweak your neck or hurt your back by the end of the day. And you can load it full of business cards and flyers and, you know, your notepad, extra water, you know, batteries if you're carrying a camera or whatnot. So that kind of stuff, you know, just be prepared, because I'm not going to say this. It's a big event, super spread out. So if you're going to head out, just count on not being back at your camp for a long time if you're going to walk around. So just bring everything with you. So a comfortable
including your layers
definitely helps.
Including your layers. Because it will not be fun to be someplace and you want to be there and you got to walk all the way back to your campsite to get a jacket. So make sure you have your layers with you.
Yep.
So do you have any plans for Overland Expo? I know we have some plans, but I mean, do you have any like?
You know, I'm going to spend every year. I have a different goal. And I think this season, I'm going to spend a little bit more time with vendors. I know that sounds kind of fun, different coming from me, but because generally I spend a lot of time with the education side of it, and I will still be doing some instructional stuff this year. And I've always gotten trapped down with the truck. You know, my Overland rig is going to be in the showcase vehicle section. So that in itself is certainly time consuming. But I'd like to get out, particularly in Flagstaff, because there are so many vendors there, and kind of go through and kind of see and get a vibe of what is on the Overland market currently, what's hot, what's not. And, you know, we'll be able to talk about that in future podcasts.
And for those who have never been to an Overland Expo, there's West, there's East, and there's Mountain West and Pacific Northwest.
And add to that, there's also same company. They do the Overland Adventure or Outdoor X Overland Adventure thing that's in Utah. So that's happening in the end of June.
Right.
So what? Five of us now.
Yep. So where I was headed with that was, if you're only going to go to one, and the reason you're going is you want to see the most, vendors, maybe you're shopping for a new tent or a new trailer or whatever it is. If a vendor can only go to one event, he generally chooses West. Yep. So you'll have the opportunity to see the most of whatever it is you're interested in. If you are a person that likes to see concept vehicles or vehicles being introduced or new products being introduced, West is usually the choice for that. So that's why.
And to add on to that, the social media icons or people that you may follow online, the lineup this year is very good. And West also generally attracts more of those people as well. So, there's a lot to do. It's a short window. You know, when we're talking only, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it sounds like it's a big amount of time, but it could take you all weekend to get through all of that.
Oh, most definitely. Now, part of what I do requires me to walk almost every lane, every aisle of the entire event. And when the event is over, I still haven't seen a lot of stuff. And I do it methodically and still miss a lot of stuff. It's like, I would say the Walt Disneyland, it's the Disneyland of overland events.
Yeah.
But with that said, it's the best event for education. It's the best event for you to shop. Even if you're not going to purchase, but you just want to be able to compare things, be able to. This is the event where the owner is usually there, you know, representing his whatever his product is. So you can actually talk to the owner. And usually when you talk to these owners, they want to tell you everything about their product and they'll break it down for you. When you leave there, you'll have more information than you ever wanted to know.
Yeah, that's true. Those of you that are wondering about food and cooking, there is a significant, I got yesterday the list of the food trucks and food available, which I think is probably the most I've ever seen at any of the Overland Expos, even better than last year. And I thought it was pretty good last year in Flagstaff. So there are options everywhere from, you know, pizza to hamburgers to sushi to Mexican to tacos to all over the place. I remember you and I last year had some killer. What were we eating?
We ate Thai food like three times from the same place.
Thai, right? That's right. That's right.
Yes. Yep. And last year, the food was excellent. There's really no reason to upgrade like they're doing. No. Last year, there were more choices than you could ever eat.
Yeah.
So I'm even wondering where they're going to put all of these new. Are they going to just add them to the same little loop, or are they going?
I heard there's going to be three different sections, and so I think they're going to be broken up a little bit. So again, my reason I'm telling you guys this is really, don't overbring, because this is my tendency, is always overpack and overbring too many supplies. So really, do yourself a service and lay off, going to the grocery store and buying too much stuff, because there's certainly a lot available. Obviously, if you want to cook, that's certainly an opportunity to do so at the camping area as well. But there's a lot out there. There's a bar. There's a couple coffee stations this year. So there's a lot of stuff to be had. And Saturday night, I'll mention, there are also, I think I just saw the list. I want to say that there's four or five separate vendor parties on Saturday night alone. So there's a lot going on. And that's after happy hour. Happy hour runs at the main tent from 5 to 7. And then this is after that. So 7, I think they're all booked 7 to 9 or 7 to 10.
I think it's 7 to 9.
Yeah.
Yep.
And by the way, one more thing to mention, if you get into town early, move in for people is on Thursday for the experience package people. Wednesday is going to be that they've held each year generally in downtown Flagstaff is going to be, I'm going to get this wrong. I'm going to tell you right now. I always call it beer and gear, but I think it's like Rigs and Brew or Rigs and Gear or Brew and Gear or I don't know what that is. We went last year and I still don't know the name of it.
So I have a question about that. They've had it every year since I can remember. But it's usually listed on the website somewhere. Yeah. I don't see any information about it.
I didn't get any. I'm only telling you this because I have inside conversation with them, so that they are doing it. I have not seen it posted anywhere either, but so I'm just kind of sending it out to you guys out there. If you're in Flagstaff, that takes place in downtown Flagstaff, you know, right in the little, well, I call it the old historic area of it. It's just kind of cool. You'll see a bunch of rigs parked down there and just people pretty much just wandering around going to the different eating places and certain, I guess, businesses open up for that event, you know, different kinds of, you know, outdoor gear and stuff like that. So we're checking out if you're in town on Wednesday.
A lot of people last year were downtown. The later it got, the more people showed up. The streets were packed. It started out just me and you, but by the end of the night, it was about, what, 30 of us maybe?
Yeah, I know. The group got bigger and bigger. Then
we were like literally going from place to place. So the reason for me telling you that is it's a very social event. You're not going to just be driving down there parking and then looking at people's vehicles. You know, people are interacting with one another. People are grouping off. People are having conversations. It's a great environment. I'm surprised other events haven't incorporated that. They steal everything from the expo. That's one of the ideas they don't ever try to do. And it gives you the opportunity, since you've made that long trip from wherever you are to Flagstaff, you get an actual opportunity to see downtown Flagstaff before you go in to the event. Because they have a nice downtown. And you mentioned it was historic. So let's get just a little, it's part of Route 66 runs right through Flagstaff. So if you're into driving historic roads, you want to get a notch, you know, get that notch on your belt that you've done a major historic part of Route 66. That's a great place to do it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's nice. There's a brewery. There's a bunch of restaurants and stuff down there. So it's a good area to check out.
And the food is good. If you like good food, you'll enjoy Flagstaff.
Yeah.
Now, everybody's not going to want to camp at the facilities that Overland Expo is providing. And I just want to put it out there. Fine. We're fortunate enough where it's called Fort Tuttle Campground where we're going to be, right? But the surrounding area is nothing but natural.
Fort Tuttle Campground is right here.
We're surrounded by nothing but national forest. So you can.
It's a combination of national forest, of BLM land, and it runs all the way down. I mean, last year you and I camped down in a section that kind of, I guess that's southeast, maybe runs down towards Mormon Lake. So that whole area is just, I mean, it's amazing. It's a beautiful area, but there's a lot of boondock camping around Flagstaff for sure. And established campgrounds too.
Right. And it's not like an hour away. It's like 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there, you don't have to feel obligated to camp there if that's not your thing.
That's correct. And even accessibility for multi-sized vehicles. My truck obviously is big. I camped in in that forest both before and after Expo because I ended up staying till Tuesday, I believe, maybe even Wednesday after Expo in the woods outside of Flagstaff there.
And a lot of people do that too. Not necessarily exactly what you said, but they enjoy the area surrounding the event the days after. So if you're planning on coming, you know, and you have the time, make this a wonderful trip. Mm-hmm. This is how I got into the whole thing of going to Overland Expo. It was an opportunity to create this awesome trip surrounding the event. And I've spoken about this before. Another plus of Olin Expo to me is its location. Because I feel like no matter where you live in America, you can create an authentic, beautiful overland trip to the event. And if there are people out there who are like, no, I live here, that's impossible, send me a DM, put it down in the comments, I'll give you an itinerary. Because that's just not true.
I mean, Flagstaff, two of the most beautiful places right nearby. You've got the Grand Canyon, is both sides of the Grand Canyon you can access from there. And you've got Sedona, which is just south of it, just right down the road. So, I mean, beautiful area, lots of cool backcountry stuff to go see.
A very popular thing for people to do on their way or leaving the event is to do the north rim of the Grand Canyon. You know, that's about a 2.5-3 hour drive, I think, to get there. Well, to get to the trail to start to go in, and I highly recommend that. That'll be that's an epic trip to just do the north rim if you don't do anything else. So take advantage of the opportunity if you go to enjoy the region. That's all I wanted to say. I also wanted to talk about, and let me start by why I want to talk about this. Someone was asking me, how do I overcome weather changes, and how do I know about weather changes, and how do I choose my routes and things like that? And I'm not doing anything special. I'm just using things like the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I'm using the Department of Transportation and things like the local State Department of Transportation. I was telling you offline that, you know, I'm about 20 minutes from a major pass, snow pass here in Washington. And if it were not for Washington State Department of Transportation, I wouldn't know what I'm getting into when I get on the highway and head that direction. And there are other websites. There's even apps. There's a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration app. So these, you don't just have to go to the websites. These places have apps now, and you can look it up. If you've given it permission to know your location, it'll pop up and tell you the information you need for where you are. You don't have to, you know, look around and figure it out. I also recommend, and it's only because of my ignorance, because I don't know of anything else, I use the Weather Channel app. I use the premium Weather Channel app. And I think it gives me all types of information. When it says in 30 minutes it's going to rain, lo and behold, 30 minutes, the rain is coming down. It's very accurate. It's very up to the minute.
I mean, my favorite thing, of course, is the blue dot, right? I call it the blue dot. You're the blue dot, and you're watching the radar. So, you know, here comes the radar. NOAA has that as well. And you can just watch the movement. You can glean a lot about weather by just watching radar, really. Right. I mean.
Well, even the meteorologist, when you're just watching the news, what does he do? He goes to that to explain what's really going on. So I just wanted to cover that. So if you're traveling here and you're trying to figure out your route, there are major government organizations that you can get an app or go on the website, and you'll know traffic patterns, you'll know weather patterns, you'll know everything that you need to know.
If you truly travel a lot, my phone has got so many apps on it, and I'm glad you brought up apps, because it's not just for weather, it's for travel, it's for places to stay, it's for GPS. It's just about everything that's legit at this point that you need to know comes in the form of an app. Right, Phil?
So I lucked up into bringing us into this. I think this is a good conversation to have, because I don't know how Android phones work, but on an iPhone, you know, you have different pages of apps. Well, I have one page and it's nothing but travel on it. And on my travel, I have every app that I use to find camp. I have every app for if I was to get a cabin or a hotel or something like that. Booking.com, Priceline, KOA, things like that. I have all my banking information in a tab on that page. I have event companies like Eventbrite. I have those tabs. So when I go to events, I can pull up tickets and things like that. So I would advise you to dedicate one page of your phone, and it's for totally for travel. I have all my weather apps on that page. I never have to leave that app when I'm traveling for travel information.
Yeah. It's funny. Same thing on my phone. That's exactly how I do it. I put them in folders, and I've got the folders divided up by that. So anything I need, you know, whether it's AAA, you know, to just be, you know, you lock your keys out of your car, your car breaks down or whatever happens. Just anything that is travel related. I like what you said about, you know, Eventbrite, because by the way, it's not just for concerts and stuff like that. You know, I've been to a bunch of overland events that actually are booked through Eventbrite, you know, trying to get tickets or even buying a meal at, say, you know, one of the events that, you know, if it's a private party and it's done through Eventbrite. So all of this stuff, you know, is endless. My GPS section alone has, you know, like Gaia, and it has Google, and it has the iPhone or the Apple one. It has just stuff like, you know, connections to where to camp. You mentioned KOA. I'll do a KOA. I have the KOA app. So all my information is already stored in these things. So if I'm, you know, if it's late and something happened on the road and I'm, you know, driving along and, you know, it's, you know, it's dark and it's, I got to find a place. The last thing you want to be doing is rummaging through your car, looking for your credit card, trying to remember all your numbers and all this stuff to book a campsite at the last second. You know, it's so much easier if all this stuff is pre-done. You know, the states, you mentioned states. Both national parks and state parks have different reservations. So I've saved all Camp America and all that stuff. Those are all saved with all my information in them because different states use different apps and different online platforms to do their bookings of sites and things like that. You know, all the updates for you and I talked offline before about updates for roads, for national parks, you know, snow conditions, you know, chain laws in different places. You know, a lot of national parks now are requiring reservations to, you know, like Glacier, as an example, near my property in Montana, you know, to go up the road to the sun, you gotta book that in advance. You know, so that's, you know, nowadays you better have a smartphone and make it a smartphone. Like, it's not just a camera. I mean, a lot of us use it as a camera, but it also is a good place to store all this stuff. But it's so frustrating. Even today, I had to Uber, you know, and there's the app, the Uber app. You know, it knows me. I'm in there. Everything's entered. You do three buttons, and there you go. Got the ride. So that kind of stuff is really time saving, which always goes back for me into making your trip so much more enjoyable if you don't have to struggle with stuff, you know?
So let's give real world anecdotal stories, as because I know people are going to listen and say, that's not a big deal. As you know, last year at the end of my trip, I had a little accident. Well, I had a person coming to get my vehicle, and I was in a hotel within 2.5 hours after my accident. Because I had an app. I just went into my insurance app and it knew where I was. I didn't have to explain to them where I was. I didn't have to explain nothing. I just said I had an accident and they came and everything was worked out through the app. I never, ever actually talked to a real person until like 2 days later.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm glad you bring that up because your information for your vehicle, like having an insurance app and like having your registration and all these stuff that you're going to need, if it's in your phone, it's huge, right?
Right. And like with my insurance app,
I'll give you another real world thing, Bill. Embarrassing. I could say another real world app happened to me today. I mentioned locking your keys in the car with AAA. Well, that actually happened to me about 3 hours ago. I had a rental car, and you know, like most cars now, has that automatic fob. Now I drive a 1994, store in Stevenson. There's no key fob involved with this thing. So sure enough, what do? I leave the key fob in the car and get out. And, you know, I don't understand why that happens, but this particular car locked. I went in the grocery store to buy a few things, came running back out. And sure enough, car's locked. Luckily, I'm in a little small town, and they came out and, put the lock thing down, and AAA came out. But I didn't have anything. I call up AAA. Luckily I have it on my phone, right? Because I call them up and they're like, oh, what's your member number? Blah, 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 blah. Well, I have all that stuff. All that stuff was locked in the car. My license was in the car, my AAA card, everything was in the car. So true life story.
And as far as like when we were talking about hotel and camp apps and stuff like that, we can give another real world. Last year, think about when it was, we had 7 vehicles on the Blue Ridge Parkway, and we seamlessly did a trip down the East Coast because everybody was able to get on the app, find camp spots, find things. Remember, we were talking back and forth on the radios, and we were able to sort out things that some people plan weeks and months ahead of time, and we were doing it on the fly. I don't suggest doing things on the fly, but it allows you to have some spontaneity. It allows you to do last minute things when necessary.
And we were traveling in a group with, like, I don't know, it was 6 trucks or 7 trucks. So on the GMRS radios, we were able to communicate, because it's not always, and that, by the way, it was leaf peeping season, right? So it's busy. And we were trying to, call it up campgrounds, basically being like, hey, can we get 7 trucks in there? And they're like, 7? You want 7 sites? We were like, well, we could probably put 2 at each one, really, honestly. We're all traveling together. But you're right. You know, it's the more that you have accessible to with you all the time, the better.
I think we need to do a separate podcast and go through apps. Because I have like a list of apps that I think you should have on your phone if you're a traveler.
By the way, some of them we didn't mention yet. Gas apps. I use Mudflap because I drive a diesel rig. So Mudflap is an app that truckers use to get better prices on diesel. So I will tell you, there are diesel fill-ups. When I'm traveling across the states, I can get up to sometimes it's as much as $1 a gallon. That's huge, particularly when you're filling a rig like the size of mine. That's a big tank.
Yeah, and for those who haven't used these kind of apps, some of them literally have a little map that goes with your location, and it just has these little flags, and it's like $4.99 a gallon, and it shows you the little flags. You click on it, and it'll give you directions on how to get there.
Yep. Which, by the way, interesting you mentioned that. People ask me, weirdly enough, I have literally in my cab 3 forms of GPS navigation going at any one time. I have my Garmin Overlander, which is my main GPS. And then typically I will have my cell phone. And I also have an iPad mounted in my cab. And people say oftentimes, well, that kind of seems like gross overkill. Not necessarily, because I'll be running, first of all, none of them are ever 100% right. So pre-warning there. But occasionally I'll be running my main navigation. And then, like Phil said, if I bring up, say, it's $1 cheaper there, boom, I'll hit go in my cell phone, and that's running a kind of a separate GPS, but they'll bring back together or whatever. But it's a lot easier than having to reprogram my main Garmin Overlander, because I want to get gas over, maybe it's a town over, but it's $1 cheaper. So, they're right there on my tank. I'm going to save $80 in one fill up. That's a lot.
Yeah. I use it in a similar way as you just described, but sometimes when I'm traveling, Maybe I hear something on the local radio or an idea pops up in my mind to do something completely different than what I was going to do. Well, I can research on one of them and still have the other one running and continue on going on my trip. So if I continue the trip, it hasn't been, you know, stopped. And I can just go deep down into the research because I'm not worried about what I'm doing on this tablet or whatever or my phone.
Right. So and before you know, you're lost because you know, if you only have one source and you're doing something, and next thing you know, you've missed three exits and you're sunk.
And another thing that I like about it is they give, like, I have the three GPS setup like you do. And what I notice is they'll all have a very, very similar route. But like you'll get into a town, a little small town. One will drive around the town and one will take the business loop through the town and little things like that. And I'm able to look at the two different ones. And as I'm driving up to the town, I can kind of tell which one I should take. And then I just pick the one I want to take. And when you take the other route, the other GPS is reroute and figure out. And then they make their route the same as the other one. Am I making sense?
Absolutely. And I make sure that I'm using different systems, you know, so if my iPad, I'm using Google, and my phone, I may use the Apple navigation, because it's just, there's different sources. So different, you know, more minds is better than one mind, I guess is the theory. And I agree with you. When I come into town, I'll tell you what, the Garmin Overlander, I call it the Main Street tour company, because I joke about this, you know, driving multiple cross-country trips. I got to tell you, the Garmin Overland, I don't know why that program runs differently than the other GPS, but it always, always, always takes me down Main Street in any town if I'm off an exit somewhere. Always. So, you know, it's like I'm on, if there's cobblestones, I'm on them with the Garmin Overlander. It's fascinating.
If I'm somewhere remote and all my GPSs are giving me different answers or on how to take a route, and I have to pick one and I'm not sure, I always go with Garmin. Garmin seems to be right more often than any of the others for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially remote and off road. It shocks me sometimes how it knows little roads. I'll see a road and be like, nobody's been on that road for 20 years because the grass in the center is this high and everything. And it knows it.
I'm going to tell you why, because both Google and Apple, I think, those are the two that obviously that I use a lot. They seem to be very heavily geared to trying to get you on a highway.
Yes.
You know, so sometimes their routing is not ideal for necessarily for what we do, because A, we want to see scenic things. In my case, my truck isn't all that fast anyway, so it really doesn't matter what road route I take. I'd rather take the more scenic one and avoid the highway. And, you know, even sometimes when you put into Google or Apple, you know, avoid highways, they still seem to take you to like something that's not a highway, but just short, shy of a highway. You know, so it's a major secondary road rather than the Garmin will legit take you. If you want to go the shortest distance, it'll put you on a potential dirt road or something, which is fine. I mean, you know, but it's a little more flexible, I think, in our world.
And you already know what I'm about to say. So this is for the audience more so than anybody else. A lot of my navigation is done by me simply going, I click avoid highways and I click, it gives you an option as to whether you're okay with using gravel or dirt roads. I click on that. Mm-hmm. And the Garmin will take you on some of the greatest trips if you just follow it after you've told it to stay off the highway. A lot of times when people have asked me, how did you find that? Or how did you end up there? I just followed the GPS. So, but what I was getting to is, because Google, you can say avoid highways and things like that, but it's not going to veer off like how Garmin will veer off. Garmin will take you like a state away. So My recommendation is if you have a Garmin and if you have these similar things on whatever GPS you have, click on avoid highways and click on you're okay with dirt roads. And it will take you some amazing ways. Mm-hmm. And if one of your goals, because a lot of people claim that their goal is to avoid as many highways as possible and to spend as much time on dirt as possible. If you do what I just said, it'll keep you on dirt most of the way. It'll take you across America damn near, and you won't get any dirt. Yep. I mean, you won't be on, you could take dirt almost the whole way. So I highly recommend that. I think the apps, I think Google Maps, I've told you this before, I think Google Maps was like the greatest thing that ever happened to overlanding. It has allowed me to research in a way, and it pushed other companies with their apps to be better. There wouldn't be a Gaia without Google Maps.
Because it integrates the map and the GPS function with the stuff. That's what I love about it. So, you know, it's like, here's the map, but then there is TGI Fridays or whatever, you know, and then you can click on something. And not only is it a map, now you can find out about the businesses and about stuff that you're seeing along the way. So I agree. That's a game changer. While we're still talking about apps, I did not mention this, but I try to keep an app from just, maybe one hotel chain, for a Sheraton hotel chain, for the Marriott hotel chain. I got, you know, all these things, airlines, another one. You can take advantage of points on all of this stuff, whether it's hotels or airfare or all this crap. So don't be lazy. And when you book something, I know this is a, you know, human nature. You'll be like, well, I just booked a Delta flight, but I never fly Delta. So I'm not going to fill out all this crap and get their, you know, app and get their, freaking flyer miles and all this stuff. And then inevitably, I'm going to tell you what happens. 6 months later, that thing you said you've never used, you're on it again. And now you could have probably gotten a free flight somewhere, but you didn't because you didn't do it. So, it's like KOA campgrounds. So like I'm like a preferred member in there, you know, it's not something that I typically I'm looking for, but I'll tell you what, they're consistent. And when when you just don't know the area, you don't know what's going on, you don't have enough time, and you're just, whatever you're doing, you're transiting through. I look for where the nearest KOA is, because I know exactly what I'm getting when I go there. All my information's already in there. It's not some new thing I gotta, you know, create. Just telling you, I mean, the more organized you are on the road, and apps, that's what apps do for you, is organize.
Yes, I agree with the points thing. Another advantage of the points thing, at least for me, is sometimes I was going to stop somewhere for a day. And then when I got there, I was like, oh, wow, I would love to be here another day or two. And I walk right back into the KOA and I say, can I use some of my points? And I might stay two more days and I spend like $5.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
I'm talking about in a cabin. I'm not even camping. I'm in a cabin for $5 for a couple of more days because I have so many points. Hotel.
Yeah, whether it's campgrounds or hotels or airlines or anything really travel related, restaurants for that matter. Everybody, the market is so competitive that they're all trying to one up the next person. So they're all looking to reward loyalty, right? They're all trying to get your dollars. So take advantage of that.
It allows you to be spontaneous.
All of these.
It allows you to be spontaneous. Like my wife has so many airline points that she just pretty much she'll at the last minute do things because she knows she has the points.
Yep.
And I do the same thing with my travel points. I'm able to do things at the last minute, not because I'm rich, but because I got points.
I'm flying tomorrow morning. I got a flight at 6 a.m. I'm in St. Louis right now. 6 a.m. in the morning, and I'm flying back to Baja, Cabo San Lucas, and I'm flying for free. on points.
Yeah, I don't understand how people turn down points unless you just don't travel. It just makes no sense.
No.
I have so many points at KOA that when I check in at a KOA, they literally are like begging me to use points. They're like, you don't want to use your points? You should use your points. You know, you have a lot of points.
Like, oh. That's funny you said. I remember that when you and I were in, where were we? Yeah, like in North Carolina or somewhere. Like, weren't we in Asheville or somewhere? And they were like, Phil, are you going to use your points? That was hilarious.
I only use them usually for like the second or third day. I like having that big buildup of points. One day I'm going to take a points trip if I can.
Yeah. One day you might need it. You never know. You might be in a situation where you need them. So it's like a squirrel storing up the nuts. It's important.
So last thing about KOA is some people love it. A lot of people hate it. And most of the people who hate it have never gone to a KOA, or they're not really a traveler. I highly recommend KOAs. And for you new nomadic overlander people, you don't lose cred for going to a KOA. And if you think so, whoever you're going to tell me, well, I watch so-and-so on YouTube and they never go to one. Tell me who they are, because I'm pretty sure I know them and I can tell you about the time I've seen them at a KOA.
I was about to say, I've hung out with a lot of them at KOAs. Just because they didn't film it doesn't mean they didn't go there.
And you know my pet peeve. I know guys who they only do KOAs and they go film camping and then they go back to the KOA.
Baggers.
I want that out there. Every time you're watching a video and the guys are sitting around the campfire and they're talking and everything, a lot of times, right after that video ended, they packed up and left because they don't camp, or they don't camp as much as they infer on their videos. Not even close. That's so true. And you'll have some people, because I have been the person that they've directed their ire toward. I've had people, you know, I'm on a great trip and I'm camping here and I'm camping there and all the scenic stuff. And then I post that I'm at a KOA and then everybody gives me a lot of crap. And they're like, what are you doing? And everything. And I'm like, did that just disqualify all that other stuff you've been seeing for the past 2 weeks that I went to a KOA?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I just found that, and the reason I'm going to just throw this out there, and I know we'll probably get flack as the two of us are sitting here talking about KOAs on an Overland podcast, but I'm going to tell you, over the years, I've stayed at a lot of different places, a lot of different campgrounds, a lot of different boondocking locations, you know, BLM land, you name it, Cracker Barrels and Walmarts and even Home Depots and all sorts of stuff. What I'm going to say about KOA is they're consistent. They tend to be a little more expensive than your average campground. However, they always have the same kind of facilities. They're franchises, right? So they're required to have certain things. They've always got a pool. They've always got a laundry facility. They've always got, you know, the power grid on each site. It's very consistent. Their stores stock the same things kind of inside. They're all in a system. They generally have nice like kids playgrounds and places to, like, if it's really crappy weather, to stay inside in pavilions or inside, TV rooms and stuff like that. So they're just super consistent. They also generally are located in good areas. They're usually in safe areas, and they're usually located near things that you would want to go check out. So, and when you check in and when you deal with these facilities, it's never some kind of random. I don't want to downplay independent small business or anything, you know. But occasionally, I've stayed at my fair share of campgrounds where you pull in and you're like, oh boy. You know, who knows what's coming? So that's kind of eliminated. So I particularly like to use a KOA if I'm transiting a place, or if I'm in a rush, or it's late in the day or something where I don't have to, you know, I can turn off the brain. I know what I'm getting. If I get checked in there, I know what's going on. You know, I don't have to be like, do you guys have laundry machines, or where's the, do you have this or what? They're all the same. And that's what I like about the KOAs.
They are so consistent from location to location that I feel very comfortable coming in late after hours when you have to self check in. Cause I know it's not going to be different than the last one. It's going to be the same format every time. So I'm not going to feel uncomfortable getting there when it's dark and no one's there to greet me and take me to my site, because it's not going to be any different than the last place I went. If it's different, yep. It just means it happened.
Well, I would say the other thing to mention is that they're typically, and maybe there may be a limit on for the franchise, they have to be a certain size. They're typically larger campgrounds too. And the advantage of that is it's less likely to be full, because they're just, you know, and they have more facilities for different size rigs and whatnot. And I've never been turned away at a KOA for any kind of rig, because I know that goes around out there too. People I've heard on, you know, not allowing schoolies or, you know, self-built things or different stuff. I never experienced that on any KOA where, I typically am driving something weird and I've never had any problems.
Yeah, I think that's hilarious how bougie RV campers can be, where there's certain RV camps that your vehicle has to be like a certain amount of years old, a certain height, a certain weight. Yeah. Some of them literally need you to send them a picture of your vehicle with your reservation. That is crazy.
Yeah, that is insane. I mean, I will tell you, some of that has to do with insurance, because of vehicles that were, I don't want to say they're discriminating against them, but they're trying to weed out the really hacky self-built stuff, you know, in the event that there's a fire or something that their insurance doesn't allow it. But I will tell you, and that's the argument, of course, that they're always going to use. I don't know how true that really is, because like you said, I know of some facilities that require you to send a picture of what it looks like, blah, 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 blah. I don't think that has anything to do with insurance, you know, because the fact that your RV might be built in a factory, but it was built 12 years ago and it's brown, it shouldn't affect the insurance, you know. There was a place in California I saw that required everything to be white. Like all the RVs had to be white based. So, you know, like, you know, your typical big class A's and travel trailers and stuff, usually they're white in color. And, you know, they could have stripes and stuff on it. But what I think it was weeding out is like old stuff, or some of the new stuff, like they've come out with, I've seen, I forget what company makes it, where they're orange or they're different colors. They're clearly like somehow trying to avoid that. Why? You know, God knows. So I don't think that's insurance.
I know it's not insurance, because I talk to people that own some of these campsites. I ask them questions and I talk to RVers, and it's no different than like neighborhoods. It's just, I don't want you in my neighborhood because I think so much of myself. I don't want to be with the riffraff. That's right. The bottom line. And they feel like they have a stereotype of the guy who buys the schoolie. They have a stereotype of the do-it-yourself person. You know, he's a hippie, or she's a hippie, or hippie couple. They smoke weed. They're loud. They you know what I mean. They have a stereotype, and they don't want to be around those type of people.
Right. And two things that I want to bring up quick. It works in opposite of that too, because I've seen a growing trend of some communities and RV parks that are geared only towards van life, that aren't allowing bigger rigs or don't want RVs in there. So it works in the opposite direction too. I'm not really keen on that either. I think I think it's just, you know, I don't care whether you're in a Jeep or a Class A RV, who cares, right? I mean, people out with different modes of transport doing the same thing.
Yeah, I always just think to myself in situations like this, what makes you the gatekeeper? What qualifies you to be the gatekeeper?
Right.
You know?
And that's the problem. It's very subjective anyways, right? So, yeah, I love it. We're on a podcast and we're going all over the place. We're all off topic as usual. I got two more things to say. One, let's end the KOA thing. I mean, one bad thing happened to me at a KOA, actually happened to us. We, speaking of laundry, we put our laundry in at a KOA. Oh. Remember that? So we both lost our puffy jackets. Our Patagonia puffy jackets did not succeed in making it through the, apparently it must have been the temperature of their dryer. I don't know. I've never seen anything like that. They came out.
Remember? I knew that my jacket and my vest could be damaged because it's material. It can be, but I didn't, it shrank down to like the size for a toddler.
It was,
and then the other one,
3-year-old or less.
And then the other one was burnt up like I had stuck it in a fire.
And I had all those. I don't know why it was only Patagonia, though. We had all sorts of stuff in there. I had 3 pairs of Patagonia shorts that came out looking like somebody just ripped them into little fabric like markers.
Confetti.
Yeah, I don't understand. And then the other thing is totally off random. See, this is why we go random here. I watched last week, I don't think I mentioned on any of our podcasts, I watched that movie Nomadland. And if you guys have not seen that, my initial impression of it before I watched it, you know, I had won, I think it had won, I don't know if it won or 2 Academy Awards. For best actress she won. And I was kind of poo-pooed it because I heard people talking about it. And I go, oh, it's just painting, you know, nomad van life, whatever culture is kind of blah, you know, whatever. I watched it. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, very good movie. And sadly, because there are definitely parts of it that are tough. I would say very true. So if you are at all interested in what people experience out there, living full time on the road, and in the case of this movie, I show you, which also sadly exists, of people that really have to live full time on the road. It's definitely a movie to worth watching. So
I didn't want to watch it I didn't want to watch it because I felt like it was going to be a very sad story. And I didn't want to watch a sad story, but from what you're telling me, I'm going to check it out this weekend. You mentioned about
how it's both. It's sad and it's positive.
You were mentioning how it's also the solution for a lot of homeless people. And that's something I'm just starting to learn. I was under the impression, hey, if this guy has a rig with all this stuff on it, and I see him everywhere I go across the country, and he must be doing okay. But there are a lot of people that are living by the skin of their teeth. You know,
I've heard it said that, you know, if you see somebody, like, I'm just going to give you an example. If you see somebody that's driving around in a $150,000 Sprinter van and they're traveling around, your initial gut reaction, and it was, certainly it was my case, was like, well, they're obviously not so financially challenged. They've got an expensive van. They're traveling around in the country. But here's the thing. And this is real. So it's a different perspective. But think of it this way. Never assume. You don't know what the circumstances are at all. But I'm going to give you an example. What if they had a $500,000 house and it was, you know, mortgaged 400,000 of the 500,000 or 350,000 of it, whatever, was mortgaged, and they lost their job We went through a recession. You know, they've laid off. They worked for who knows? You name the company, right? Amazon, Google, Facebook, whoever. And they were in Crapville. And all they had was that when they got rid of that house and they had no other assets, they owned, you know, credit card debt and all this other stuff. And that's all they had left. And, you know, the market, I can tell you, being in real estate, the housing market is challenged. You know, it's very hard. Stuff's way overpriced. They took their last $150,000 and bought that van. So just because they're driving around in a $150,000 Sprinter van, they might have $0 to their name. And that's it. And the reason they bought that is that because they knew that was the most inexpensive way of being able to have a roof over their head, quite literally. And that's what they're doing. And they're traveling around and they're trying to boondock because they're trying to keep their overhead down. Because mm-hmm. the problem is if they had taken that money and invested in another place or paid rent or somewhere else, it accumulates, right? Because you've got all this overhead involved with utilities and expenses living in places and stuff. So it's not always what it looks on the surface. And, you know, the Nomad Life was interesting watching that movie. But I'll tell you what, being on the road, I have met a lot of people that I would call they're on the road because they have to be on the road. It was the best option to keep a roof over their head. So just don't always judge the book by its cover because you don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm just learning that like in the last couple of years, I've gotten to know some people who I admired from afar. And now that I know them, the story that had me liking them isn't true.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like them because I was like, oh, I think they're rich. That's not it. But I admired them because I felt like they had themselves together. Oh, you figured this out. Now, what you just described, I'm not talking about that. If you got to do what you got to do, you got to do what you got to do. I'm not talking about those people. Do what you got to do.
And there's every range, obviously, from there. So, you know, the movie presents a woman that very similarly, like, you know, lost her job. Essentially, that town closed up. And I think it takes place maybe 10, 15 years ago, actually. But in reality, if anything, the movie was incredibly predictive. Because I would say that today, particularly COVID and post-COVID, is even more relevant than it was probably when the movie was made.
It's crazy that we haven't completely gotten away from COVID's effects yet.
Well, no, I mean, because we're on our podcast and we're all over the place, we might as well talk about that. No, of course we're not over that. I mean, that's going to be, that may be, the effects of that are probably life. You know, we're not going to see the end in our lifetime, potentially. I mean, right now, the economy in America is super poor. I think it's, you know, personally, I think it's far worse than what you're hearing on any of the fake media. And by the way, that includes everybody. I think it's really bad. I was on a call the other day with my real estate people. I own a franchise, and I was on a call with, you know, people all around the country. And you know, the prediction right now is, I mean, right now, real estate is in the tank because the inventory is so low that, you know, every house that comes up on the market. I mean, it's a great time if you want to join Nomadland and Nomad Life. This is the best time to sell your house in the history of the world. Take it from somebody that's in real estate, because we are getting multiple offers on everything. If you make an offer on a property at this point and you have any contingencies on it, or you have even having a mortgage contingency on it, you're not going to get it. I mean, that's how crazy it is. You know, we'll get between 20 and 40 offers, say, on an average house. I don't care. You could have a 10-foot hole in the roof from a meteor and it's going to sell. So, I mean, it's crazy because there's just simply not enough inventory. That's going to change. And what you're seeing, and probably where you are, Phil, it's probably started on the West Coast. We're seeing we're seeing prices starting to go down in certain places. Certainly not where I am either. I see Phil shaking his head. But that's what's going to probably happen over the next 6 months. In America, you're going to see prices depress. The interest rate obviously is high. It'll probably be at 8% come next first quarter of next year. And I think you're going to see that the inventory is going to go up. So it's going to get better for a buyer. It's going to get worse for a seller. But historically, nationwide, on average, if you look at real estate over the past 25 years, it's not been a great investment because, the market's gone up and down. But most people's homes, there's exceptions and pockets of places for sure. But most people's homes have not greatly increased in value in that span of time, which is weird. And now we're talking about them sort of starting to drop. And so all of this is economic based, right? There are simply a lot of people that don't have the same amount of resources and the same amount of funding that they used to. And commercially, with companies that laying off people, a lot of companies obviously in retail sector going out of business, a lot of pressure being put on commercial real estate. Office buildings, as an example, because more people are not working in an office. That's a big economic problem. And what it translates into for you and I is that price of eggs, price of gas, price of milk, price of whatever, electricity, people are seeing that pressure, I think, in most of the country where electricity prices are sky high. It's not good news. And I know this is an Overland podcast. So how does this relate to overlanding? I have no idea.
So I need to ask you some real estate questions after we get all offline, because I got offered an opportunity to be part of a group. And I'll just cut to the chase. When they got to how much I was supposed to give as my portion, that was the reason why I couldn't do it. I couldn't afford it. They assumed I had money that I do not have. Anyway, there are groups getting together to buy and rent pretty much all of downtown, most of the Amazon buildings that are closing down or whatever, and they're going to reconfigure them to be homes. Some of them will be condos, some of them will be rental apartments. Some of them are actually going to be taken over by the city government and used for low income housing. So yeah, real estate has really, really changed, because I never thought I'd see a day where that would happen.
And that may solve some of the problem that we're having right now. When you have a shortage of inventory and a shortage of places to live,
well, it'll solve the problem. It'll solve the problem for the rich folks who own the buildings, because now they figured out a way to get people back in their buildings. But it ain't helped the regular guy at all. Not at all.
As we've talked about this before, everything economically, whether you're looking at this from a perspective of, let's call it, just conservative or a liberal side. Everything that comes out of both sides as a solution generally hurts the people at the bottom. So, let's say take it from a liberal side, that the COVID, let's take COVID years as an example, where, the PPP and significant amounts of I'm going to call it, I don't know what they called it at the time, bonus money that they were sending checks to people to stimulate the economy or whatever. Ultimately, those things negatively impact the people at the bottom far, far, far worse than people in the middle or at the top. Even though they may be the ones that are receiving the check at the time, so if I get a check for $1,000 today, in 6 months, all it means is that the price of eggs that I got to buy is double. So that didn't help me at all. You raise my minimum wage, and I make more money, but if you charge me three times what you raise my wage for, go figure. So, this happens from both sides of the spectrum for sure. But and it's a real problem, obviously.
And even if none of those things happen, when they give you the money, the people who qualify for the money, because I don't ever qualify for none of the stuff they ever give away, ever. If you qualify for the stuff that they give away, when you get that money, it's out your hands practically. You never see it. You're usually paying some bills back that you have
already had.
So again, the money, they're giving you the money to funnel back to them. It would now if they gave you enough money where you could get back on your feet and then you had a few grand in the bank, that would be a good thing. But that's not what they do. They give you enough to keep the economy afloat, which is a slick word for the 1% to be afloat. And for anybody listening, I'm talking about either side you want.
Talk about economic. It never has. None of these things ever have anything to do with humans, right? It always has to do. I mean, they could bill it. They always bill everything as this is good for XYZ. This is good for, you know, all these groups of people, all this stuff. All bullshit. I mean, it's always for the economy. It's always for something else. It never has anything to do with actual human beings. They're always going to bill it that way. I mean, the bottom line is if you spend money, you got to print it. Right. Our system of money is not based on gold any longer. So and the more money you print, it's a direct proportion to what the inflation rate is. That's the way it works.
Oh, yeah. Our money isn't based on anything. It's based on gold dreams.
That's right. If you got gold, right now is a good time because at $2,000 an ounce, this is a good time to sell gold.
And I just saw a little documentary. You better get your gold tested. And not, they have these things on TV where you can buy gold, but you never get the gold. They hold on to the gold for you.
Right.
So you better actually physically get the gold and then you better go get it tested.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. See, you turned into an Overland podcast and you would expect that us be talking about Jeeps or something, but we're talking about gold. And gold
So let's bring it back around for those who don't see the direct connection. Because of our government, because of the way things work economically, one, it makes it hard for those who want to become travelers or nomadic. And a large majority of the ones who are doing it because it's an economic decision that's been forced upon them. So that's all we're really talking about.
Yep. Yep. For sure. Yep.
I really hope something changes soon because the future looks bleak.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wish I could say something different, but I think we're into this for a while now. You know, we had sort of like the 2 years, I'll call it the 2 years plus of a pandemic scenario that affected us. And now we're into a, you know, let's call it a 2 to 5 year post pandemic. And by the way, I'm not suggesting that this is all pandemic based. You know, things go up and down. There's lots of factors that are going on, but I'm just giving you as a time reference. I think you got a couple more years of change. Change is probably a good word.
So, Mike, on our next podcast, I want us to get more into, and we'll work on this offline. We're going to show all the apps that you have on your travel page. I'm going to show all the apps on my travel page. And we're going to talk more in detail about them. Not that just we have them, but how we integrate them into our travel and why we love using them and how they help us travel. I think that would be beneficial for a lot of people.
Agreed. It's all the time. I'm like, what do you use to do this? Or what do you use to do that? So I think you're right. I think it'd be, that's definitely a good topic to spend some time on.
All right, everybody, you know what I'm going to say. Stay safe, tread lightly, and hopefully I'll see you here or on a trail soon.
You have been listening to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints. Like, subscribe, and stay tuned for more.